Hello, this is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you. Today, part 4 of our series of the agonizing pain in which I live every day.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
Listening to This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am your host on this Canadian long weekend, Mike the Birdman Dodd. I am joined with
Alex
and Mr. Christopher.
So, as you may notice, we took last weekend off so we could just kind of relax. We had a lot of content come out last week anyway. So.
Yeah, it wasn't that we weren't recording other things, it was just
we had a long recording day.
We had a lot of stuff, and then we're like, we could have done it, and then Mike was like, I'm an old man baby, I need to take a nap. And
yeah, I needed a nap too. I was toast.
Oh, God.
And then I was like, you sure? Because I drank 1.8 liters of coffee.
And we watched you do it.
To get prepped for it. And then he's like, nope, we're canceling it. And I'm like, no, but it's already in my body.
But we started at stupid o'clock that morning. We recorded... Yeah. Cambridge Chronicles. We recorded Marvel Avengers Aftermath, which has been a long time coming. The week, 2 weeks before that, we recorded Alex's World War One game, and then we're recording two more games this month. So,
like, we had Twig After Dark, and then we had
Treasure,
a couple botched rolls, and
prototype,
and it all adds up. Like, you may not think it, but like that, to record 1 hour of a show, it's actually 2 hours generally, set up, tear down, not even including editing and all that. So you add that up, that's like 8 hours a day if you wanted to do that. And it's like, no.
Yeah, we were just utterly exhausted. But we are back here with you, the lovely Twig fans. And speaking of the Twig fans, got to send out a huge shout out to our winners of our contest we ran on Twitter and Facebook. We got two winners from Twitter. They have been contacted. They won a Blu-ray copy courtesy of Paramount Pictures of A Quiet Place, which was a movie that came out earlier this year about, I'm not really going to tell you. It's a scary movie. It's about monsters. There'll be a review of that coming out next week, so stay tuned for that.
A winner is you.
A winner is you, so big thanks.
Winrar.
I'm trying to think, what else have we been doing? Tristan and I talked about the summer gaming update, which... I've actually been playing more video games this week than I have in a while.
Are you playing the right video games?
No. Major Nelson announced this week, due to backwards compatibility, Ubisoft put Splinter Cell Double Agent and Splinter Cell Blacklist on backwards compatibility, which means I'm hoping against hope next year at E3 we'll see a new Splinter Cell game. Because I really like that series, and it's been 5 years since we last saw Sam Fisher.
Stealth as a gameplay hasn't really been shining all that much lately, though. It's just not the focus. Everything's all about, run and gun. You got your Fortnite dominating the scene right now, so everything's trying to be like that, have that energy level. And stealth just isn't that. It's not supposed to be.
Like, the last game that did that successfully in the last couple of years was Hitman Season 1, which is now available part of Xbox Games Pass, which is a fantastic game, by the way.
And Deus Ex, the game that you should have been playing.
Which is a game I am going to get to this week. I'm just going to finish Splinter Cell first, because I'm more than halfway through it. But now that I know I've got... Now that I'm getting my gaming groove back...
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to shoot people in the head with silenced weapons.
How Birdman got his groove back. There's a movie.
What did it take? Sam Fisher and an Xbox controller and It was Love Baby. So coming up on the show this week, we have a review of Survive Mr. Cube coming from Mr. Christopher himself. I have a review of Ready Player One coming just from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. We'll also be talking about some cool stuff coming to D&D and Patreon, despite the Patreon apocalypse this past week, where they were declining credit card payments as fraudulent. Though I think that's been resolved, so check your Patreons if you're still subscribed to certain people. We're also going to be talking about some weirdness involving donkeys and a gamer who is disabled but has kicked the crap out of most people I know. And I'm talking people even in the competitive scene. So we'll be talking about that across news, weird news. We'll also have a visit to Satan's Pantry, as we often do. But that's what you can look forward to here on this episode of Twig, the Flagship of Stupidity. We'll be right back, guys, right after this. And our sponsor, Libris Arcana, where you can get your dice for only $7.97 with free shipping Canadian. And you should also check out their Kickstarter that'll be coming up later on this year, which I think is called The Year of Dice. But you can find them on Twitter at Libris Arcana. And check them out. We'll be back, guys, right after this. We are talking about Ready Player One, coming to us from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. This is a Steven Spielberg movie, which means you should get excited for it because it is a huge throwback to the properties of the 1980s. This movie is about Wade. He's a kid of 2045, a dystopian future where basically sees people spend more time in virtual reality than actual reality because, hey, reality sucks, such as the 1995 movie. But it can be a world where you can be anyone, anything. You want to be RoboCop, the Terminator, a Power Ranger, a Battle Mech, a Gundam, anything you want to be, you can be it in this virtual world. And literally, it's anything your mind can imagine. But what is the main story here other than nostalgia? Well, there is this eccentric billionaire who has passed away and has left Easter eggs in the wake of his death to challenge the world to find them. And if you do, you happen to win this huge multi-million, billion, trillion-dollar fortune, but also control over the Oasis itself. So Wade and his friends are searching for these Easter eggs because they think they know this billionaire the best. But there's also these corporate Easter egg hunters who are the bad guys in the movie, and they want to basically privatize the Oasis, basically to be the microtransaction douchebags of people we know today. I'm looking at you, EA. But what you get is a movie that's fairly entertaining overall. I mean, if you like any nostalgic properties, I mean, there's stuff here from The Shining, Gears of War, Halo, RoboCop. Pretty sure I saw the Terminator in there. There's a pretty awesome Gundam fight in this thing, and I never thought I'd see Gundam on the big screen that wasn't animated. And it's pretty awesome. It stars Ty Sheridan and a bunch of young up-and-coming actors whose names, unfortunately, I cannot remember off the top of my head, but you get really good performances all around. Now, this movie did pretty good at the box office. I know Alex reviewed this on the show earlier this year. Watching this movie, I was fairly entertained by it. I felt some of the nostalgia was a little hitting me over the head, but still, I got an entertaining story. Hell, I never thought I'd see the DeLorean race against the bike from Akira, if anything, so there's that. Now, what makes the Blu-ray special is you get over 2.5 hours, or at least over 2 hours, of special features. Because it's a Spielberg movie, they cover everything from the influences, from This is the 80s, to costume design, to sound design, to every little conceivable detail that you'd want to know about this. And I was actually really impressed how much time and effort that was put into this Blu-ray special feature. So if you liked the book that came out in 2010, 2011, and you've heard the audiobook, and you're eagerly anticipating the, I think there's a sequel coming out, Ready Player 2 at some point, then you should probably check out this Blu-ray from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. You can get this on 4K Blu-ray, DVD, and digital right now from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
Ready Player One is now available on DVD and Blu-ray. say it's pretty good. I haven't seen it yet. I want to give it a look myself.
I enjoyed it in theaters.
Yeah, it's something that if you want to borrow my copy, more than willing to give you one. So we are here in the news of the week. We're actually going to kind of change things up here on Twig because we want to have more in-depth discussion rather than throwing article after article at you. We're just going to pick a couple of topics a week and we'll go a little bit more in-depth about them. So as you know, here on Twig and the Cambridge Chronicles, you're sitting with a group of, now I consider, experienced role players.
Mostly I'm not experienced.
Oh, I thought you were going to go
40 hours plus now.
I'm a novice, but I'm not brand spanking new.
Yeah. So
I thought he was going to say, sitting in a room with a bunch of white males. Shakes fist in air.
And it's Gen Con weekend. But in honor of Gen Con weekend, I wanted to talk about something kind of neat because I saw this story come across Kotaku the other day. One of the video game franchises that I have enjoyed for the most part over the last couple years is Activision and Bungie's Destiny. You might be wondering, well, what the hell does that have to do with role-playing in Gen Con? Well, turns out there's a project on Patreon that you can support right now. The project is run by GG Kitty, and they're aiming to introduce Dungeons and Destiny. So D&D Destiny, where they're basically bringing everything that made Destiny cool and awesome on the computer game into the 5th edition rule set for Dungeons and Dragons, a total conversion, if you will.
Okay.
So they're bringing across the Gunslinger, the Voidwalker, the Blade Dancer. What other classes am I missing?
Oh,
Titan.
Goodness.
It's been so long since I've played.
The Peter Dinklage.
What does a Warlock have? Warlock was always the way I've gone in Destiny, so I'm trying to remember what that
was. I was a Gunslinger.
It was way too long. What was the sniper class?
Gunslinger?
The one where, yeah, your main weapon was a sniper rifle.
Well, your weapon choice is your weapon choice. It's your abilities that are affected.
I don't remember what it was. It's been forever since I played the first game, so I can't remember anymore.
But yeah, I just thought it was kind of neat how this Patreon is, they're doing a fairly fantastic job. So I'm looking at some of their stats. They talk about random weapon proficiencies.
They're handling this as a Patreon, not as a Kickstarter?
Yeah, because there's going to be ongoing work. What they're currently doing is, like I said, they're aiming to adapt the world, the rules, and everything else. There's also going to be a D&D Destiny Game Master's Guide,
okay,
which will discuss optional rules for new Guardians,
but
differences in designing a D&D Destiny encounter versus a D&D encounter. So they have to create a bestiary as well, so there's a new monster manual.
Okay, I have a couple questions that are very business-oriented from this.
Okay.
One, how are they doing tiers? How do they, like, if you're paying a monthly fee to them,
what do you get?
First of all, not only what do you get, how do they, like, if there's a tier to get the books when they're done, how do they know, like, are you going to have spent, like, $900 to get the books? Because,
well, it's all digital.
No, because, but they're charging you monthly.
Yeah,
so,
if you want the actual content, which includes tabletop stuff, sprites, maps, backgrounds, roleplay, combat scenarios, loot, and GM materials, that's $7.
A month?
A month. If you want to be a priority tester, that's $5.
Okay, so second question. Tiers are cool. I get that. Second question. Do they have a commitment to how long they're going to take before they release these things? Because there's a possibility of you signing up and not seeing anything for like 2 years where they just collect all the money and basically rob you.
No,
I'm always worried about, in these situations, how are they going to handle the legality of it? Like, how are they going to take your money and are they going to provide you with steady stream of actual things?
Well, what they say is supporting this project through Patreon will give you early access to the player's book. The final product of this project will be free for all to enjoy. That is their goal.
So free for all to enjoy. So then what are you paying for?
Access now.
Access now.
To be part of the development process.
So access now. Is there anything available currently?
Yes. Okay, right now, you can get an early build of the book, I think.
Okay.
I'm just double checking.
Because you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth out of it.
They got Striker, Defender, Gunslinger, Blade Dancer, Nightstalker, and Voidwalker.
Okay.
The classes that are coming to play testing are Sunbreaker, Sunsinger, Stormcaller. The core races are ready to go, so Human, Exo, and Awoken.
Okay.
They have Ghosts. And that's what they have so far. They also have the first encounter has been developed called the Devil's Lair. Now, this will make more sense to Tristan than anybody else here. They're developing the Vault of Glass as a raid encounter. They're going to add Destiny 2 classes such as Sentinel, Dawncaller, and Arcstrider. And they're going to turn the entire Taken King campaign from a level 1 character to level 20. So I think that's rather cool. That's ambitious.
Okay. Oh, no. Don't take my skepticism as bad. There is a piece of me, and I think a lot of people that would listen that would go, if you're not going to a Kickstarter and you're going to a Patreon, is it because there's a shelter of they don't have to actually provide a product at that? You're giving us a tip?
I wonder if it's a legality thing, personally, well, in terms of the final product is aiming to be free, you're paying for time right now.
Yeah, so because my secondary thing, my last question with this is,
how is this legal?
Well, not just that. What happens if you're paying monthly for this, and then they get shut down because, let's say, they didn't follow the proper channels, and somebody goes, hey, you're making money off of an engine you don't own or licensed. You're kind of fucked.
Well, I see other DMs and other web services. I know people like Dawnforge Cast offer to develop materials for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, Pathfinder, and other game systems as well. They don't own the license of that. You're paying for their time.
No, but it's not that. I'm using
the IP.
It's that, but also when you go Kickstarter, Indiegogo is a little different. When you go Kickstarter, which most of these games do, the money doesn't get dispersed to the people till the project is ready or comes in steady streams. There's a specific, there's a security involved in the money.
Whereas Indiegogo, what you get is what you get.
Yeah, what you get is what you've raised. In this situation, the worry becomes, the more people they get, are they going to work slower so they get more money?
Like, see, I don't think
there's
so.
Not, there's not really an incentive for them to come out with the product fast, because this is supposed to be something where you're tipping people for, like, making things on a regular basis. Like, here's a video I've made. I have a weekly show.
A steady content supply.
It's not supposed to be that you're paying their salary on a weekly or monthly basis.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what my worry is this against the terms of service for
Patreon?
For Patreon. For what they're providing.
Now, it could be very... I don't know. I don't really know the provider here. All I can think of...
I think the project is a brilliant idea. I think it's going to be a really cool thing. I'm just wondering how far it's going to go.
Yeah. All I can think of is that a continued support through Patreon will incentivize them to continue making more content.
Absolutely.
Because the creator here, I took a look at the Patreon themselves, and they like to adapt 5e into other modules, and this is just one project.
Okay,
they may have other projects.
Okay, that was my big thing, is this something that came out of nowhere? Like, this is a community, like, this is a person that's done a lot of these things before.
Mm-hmm.
So, if that's the case, you can trust them then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the fact that this got covered on Kotaku, which means now it's got mainstream appeal.
Yeah.
We're currently sitting at 303 Patreons for $1,260+ a month. So that's not small change to develop role-play material. And the role-play industry, I found this out by being friends with a couple people from different companies. It's a very small industry.
Yeah.
You don't make a lot of money at it. You got to hustle to make your own.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think as long as they keep the content flowing on a regular basis and they don't have delays or excuses for not having it out, you know, as long as they're not greedy,
I want quality play-tested material.
Play-tested material on a regular interval. Like, if they set a goal of saying, hey, every 2 months we're going to have something out that's a module or something for this, great. It can't become a case of 6 months go by, hey, we're still working on it, but they're just collecting a check.
Yeah.
It's got to be that they have to be held accountable. They have to be very good on the up and up and start providing stuff on a regular basis all the time.
Yeah, like, I think one thing that'll keep them busy for sure is, because we've all played Destiny here, that bestiary is huge. There's always different monsters, tons. The loot alone, you could have a 3-person team doing that alone.
Yeah, so as long as, again, like, basically, my advice to them is, don't go, we're going to release the bestiary and then take 6 months to release the one bestiary. You've got to do it on, hey, every week, here's a couple characters, here's a couple...
Yeah, like, have a steady stream instead of one giant release.
Because then you get people worried that they're not producing. That's my only thing. I think they're going to do great. They're going to have to make sure it's a constant stream. Like, there is content every week that's brand new. Every single week it would have to be.
I'd like to know why they picked D&D 5th Edition. I know it's the hot new property right now, because D&D 5th edition, I guess it is light on roleplay crunch, as opposed to, like, when we played D&D 5th on Cambridge Chronicles, we knew how combat worked. It was your D20 plus your proficiency to hit bonus, etc., etc. Yeah. I think I'm actually going to donate to this Patreon. I might drop one person I'm donating to right now to pick this one up.
Fuck you, I'm going to go to this.
Sorry, you haven't produced content in a while.
And that's exactly the point. You got to keep it that, steady flow.
That's what I was saying. Is you got to make sure good flow of content, good quality content, and then you're going to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, if I'm giving you $5, $10, $20 a month, you need to show me that there's progress happening with the donations I'm making.
Yeah, and not like in six months, you will have paid more than it would have cost to get a physical book. That's my concern.
Yeah.
So keep the content flowing.
And also having access to their Discord server, you can talk to them too, which is something I'm looking forward to, because this might be, if this project is successful, I would not mind running a one-off in Destiny.
Well, and that's the thing. As long as that's a big thing too. You just mentioned keeping an open, transparent, constant flow of communication with the people is what's going to be really important to this.
And I love it when homebrew communities do this, because one of the things I have on my tablet, for example, is someone created a Mass Effect game in D6, the old West End Games D6, and it runs, from what I can tell, beautifully. But I've also seen Mass Effect conversions for Savage Worlds. People have done it in the Dragon Age system, which is AGE.
Final Fantasy has been done in D20 and in D6. People make really cool fan systems, and they're dedicated. Like, they make artwork, they do everything.
Yeah, they look like the books.
And that's the thing. It's people are filling the gaps of what people would really want. You know, it's like, it comes into that category of fanfic, so it's not... It's not official. It's not official. It's not even gray area. As long as they say that they're not selling this product, like, where they're going to come into issues here, as long as they word this, that you're paying for
their time
and effort, you're not paying for a product that's not licensed,
They're
fine. And that's probably why they didn't go to Kickstarter.
Yeah,
because if you go to Kickstarter, it's about I'm kickstarting a project that I own.
Yeah, I'm going to give you $50 to support to get the rule book. That's an exchange of something directly. Yeah. You're paying for the product, not the service.
Yeah, because at that point you're buying the D&D rules, and no, because hell, D&D even gives you the rule. Like, there is a version of 5th edition that's free that came out with the playtest a couple years ago, and we could still use that, but you can't license that.
Yeah.
And if you want to license D&D, I hope you've got deep pockets, so to speak. Because I know back in the early days of the 2000s, so many games were licensed. There was WWE, World of Warcraft, SpyCraft, Stargate got licensed. So many properties.
D20 Modern.
Like, there's a ridiculous amount of properties that get licensed, and... it's not cheap. So I hope these guys do not get into any legal trouble. In fact, if this project is successful, I hope the right RPG company comes knocking on their door and says, hey, we've seen some good work from you. Why don't you and I have a conversation?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That is my hope.
Get picked up by a larger entity and be able to work with them to come up with more content. Maybe in a different system, but... if they show that creativity, having a creative mind like that on a professional development team, that's just good for everybody.
It may not be Destiny. It may be another MMO, or it may be something, you know.
Anything. Flintstones RPG. Who the hell knows?
Here's the Fortnite RPG. Like, whatever. Like, you could Minecraft the RPG. You could do something.
Yeah.
As long as they know you can handle the property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you know how to take an asset from X and put it into Y system, that's a valuable skill.
We need a Halo RPG.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned. I've talked with people who have been interested in the IP, and it boils down to they don't want to pay someone to go through the lore and fact check it. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. But speaking of things that are, well, kind of stupid, Tristan found this story for us, and I've got some opinions on this, because I'm an esports fan. What do you got?
People are apparently paying coaches... for their kids to play Fortnite better. Fortnite has become such an icon in all of gaming and in esports especially. People are now paying actual coaches to help their kids be better at the game.
which is insane because Fortnite, for those of you that don't know, so the whole five of you, developed by Epic Games. It's free to play. The game is powered by microtransactions. It's in early access right now. There is a P versus E mode, which is where you fight bad guys. But the most popular thing is Battle Royale. You're literally fighting 100 other players on the map and, I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to win. I'm going to go to Tilted Towers, and that's the end of it.
Oh, gee, golly.
Golly, gee.
Golly, gee. Oh, why? Why do I keep dying? Oh, I'm not good at this.
Yeah, it's... to have a coach for Fortnite, I don't see how that works because... Yeah.
Well, so far over 1,400 coaches have been hired, and that's since March. The rates for these coaches is pretty high too. The up to like $50 for 3 or 4 hours of work. So we're talking $15 to $20 an hour for these coaches to teach kids how to be better at a shooter game.
I'd like to know what they're what.
Wait, is that more than what a math professor would cost?
Like about the same.
Tutor? I don't know. I've never had a tutor.
I'm just trying to think about that. Like to get a coach for Fortnite, you're looking at a game that is completely random. So you're playing against other players. There's no training area. You're literally playing, quote-unquote, with live ammo every time you go in.
Yeah.
So a coaching session may only last 2 minutes because you could drop in the Tilted Towers and be dead.
At the same time, it's easy to just hop into a new round. I would assume you pay for, like, okay, well, we're going to sit here for 3 hours. We're going to play through things. Or maybe there's a theory portion and then a practice portion. Like, are they sitting for these official lessons? Or they have, like, a chalkboard with a map going on there?
Yeah.
This is the bus. This is where you drop. This is how you start.
Wax on, wax off.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, because one of the YouTubers that I follow who is a Fortnite YouTuber... is a guy named Drifter, and he's mostly known for Call of Duty. He's also known PUBG, etc., etc. But he's focused on Fortnite, like every clickbait YouTuber has right now. And he tells you how the guns work, damage drop-offs, range. He gives you the theory behind Fortnite, even how to build better, how to build porta forts better, etc., etc. So these coaches, I want to know, are their accounts good enough to be teaching this? What are their stats in-game, basically, unless they have X amount of wins, solos, duos, or squads? Are they worth the $20 they're paying these kids? Or are they just ripping off parents who are stupid?
You know, there's that aspect. There might also be people that aren't actual gamers that are coaches that are things like, here's how you manage your breathing. Here's how you manage your anger.
Kind of metagame aspects of how to be a better gamer in general. Like, and I've had to look up stuff like that, too. I used to be terrible at a lot of games, and whenever I would lose, I would freak out, and it would make me take or play worse as I went. You go on tilt.
Managing tension, that sort of stuff. Like there are football coaches and that aren't the actual game coaches that are just, like, therapist coaches. Like, you may have somebody that's just their job is to take a bratty kid and teach them discipline and
see, and I never considered that aspect.
Because they could use this as a means to have a kid that might be unruly. Like, this is, instead of karate or something else, this is their outlet, this is their way of becoming a more functioning part of
but
society.
But it seems to me, when I read the story that Tristan sent me, they're these coaches and these kids and these parents, they want to get them into this esports scene because Twitch has tournaments that are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's weekly tournaments by Keemstar, and I think Ninja is somehow involved. This guy just broke 10 million followers on Twitch.
The guy makes $500,000 a month.
I know,
just from his streams.
So I'm wondering if these parents are trying to have their kids, quote unquote, reach for the brass ring. But
that's,
it's not possible. I mean,
esports is wonderful to watch, and there's a lot of money in the esports scene. But the fact of the matter is, it's not that different in concept to a lot of other sports.
Yeah.
Yes, there are a few hundred players that make this kind of money doing this sort of thing, but there are hundreds of thousands of players
if
that
not
don't.
Exactly. I mean, how do you get noticed by a certain organization? I mean, one of the teams I watch, excuse me, is a team called Team Caliber, and they play competitive COD. They've also played other competitive sports. I think they played competitive PUBG and H1Z1. For a while, won some money at some tournaments. They've had a very successful COD year. Their oldest player, I think, is 28, I want to say. Esports does not have a very long shelf life for you as a player.
And it may change as things go on, depending on the genre. I know there's the Silver Snipers. Mm-hmm. They're a crew of 60-plus people that play competitive esports, and they're mm-hmm. pretty good.
So they could have the reflexes. People that could have been actual snipers,
more or less. But
the arthrite got a hold of them. They can't do it anymore.
Ultimately, your reflexes and such do degrade as time goes on. That's just how things work. But I think it may shift as time goes on. Now, as the average gamer's age increases, you may see more older players in these esports because they've been there longer. But it is generally a young person's game.
Because I was reading this on Twitter this morning, the people that grew up playing Modern Warfare 2 are old enough to drink.
Yeah.
Let that sit in for a minute.
Yeah, it's I was drinking crazy. When I was playing Modern Warfare 2.
And you were underage. No.
But yeah, no, I was not. I mean, I think having your kids want to reach to be an esports athlete, it's a goal, yeah. And on some level, it's an admirable one, but maybe not at the expense of something. I guess maybe for some people, it's more reachable than, like, say, little Timmy wants to play hockey. He's not a very good skater.
Yeah.
But maybe he's a better shooter than he is. You know,
let's consider the cost here, though. I mean, the coaching, okay, that's $50 for a four-hour training session for esports, but compare that to what it costs to play hockey.
Yeah, that's not true.
Even that. At all.
You know, I'm gonna go for the darker side of this. Is it cheaper than paying for a babysitter?
I don't know. It's,
like, mommy wants to go drink and watch TV after work, so you're going to go with your tutor now.
And go learn how to play Fortnite.
I think the only problem I'm having with the concept of parents getting these tutors for their kids is this part of the nobody should lose culture? Their kids are freaking out because they're losing because they're raised that, you know, everyone's a participant trophies and winners and such. You can say all the cliches you want about it, but there's kids that are freaking out every time things don't go their way because they've never known anything
else.
Yeah,
you can watch this on Twitch.
And so they go into these Battle Royale games, which are known to be pretty ruthless because only one person out of 100 can win. So there's 99 losers.
Yep.
So these kids are losing a lot. So now they're freaking out a lot. The parents don't want to deal with it, so they hire a tutor they find on Twitter for $50 for 4 hours.
I can't spank my kid because then they'll hate me and it's no. You know what happens when you spank your kids? They realize they did something bad and then they don't do it again.
I don't know. Like it's such. I never even thought of it like that way. Like you can't always win, and these battle royale games, like you said, very steep learning curve. There can be only one, the quote Highlander.
Oh, and if you do win, don't post it on Facebook. No one cares.
Yeah. And unless you're winning these huge tournaments, which you have to get invited to, or you have to know someone to get you in. Like, I'm pretty sure to get into Keemstar's tournaments, there's an entry fee or something. It's not just any schmuck can walk in off the street that I'm aware of. But then again, there are guys on YouTube, or there's a guy on Twitch. I've read this. There's a guy, I think his name is Mr. Beast. He donated to a Twitch streamer this week. He's like, all right, if you win this game, I'll give you $70,000. And he did. Holy shit. In fact, this past week, I watched a Twitch streamer get over $3,000 in donations. Just randomly. This girl is streaming. She's not a tit streamer. She was just playing Fortnite. And just tier 3 sub. He gifted over 170 tier 3 subs. In the course of like 3 hours.
Just pick somebody at random, went and did that. So, and that I had questions of, is that a marketing thing? Like, is there some company behind it that wants to get press?
I could believe that.
Yeah, it could be a PR move.
Not from the streamer. I mean, somebody else, some other.
Well, yeah, because it's great marketing. You pick the right smallish to medium streamer, build their hype on Twitter of their 100,000 followers. That's better than paying for any marketing campaign.
Because it looks underground, it looks viral.
Yeah, it looks like I'm doing something for a smaller community. So, that community will grow knowing that there is a boost from there. And now you have these two communities
linked. Exactly.
I mean, and I kind of wonder if these kids, if they get coaches, will they think they're good enough to stream on Twitch? Because there was another article I saw about a month ago. People have been streaming on Twitch for years and nobody watches them. And yet they still keep going.
Oh, if I plan to probably do that, I don't expect anybody to watch. You got to do it like you do anything, just for fun. You do it because you want to, not because you think you're going to get liked. I think people get caught up in the popularity contest of it all.
Exactly. The number one thing you can do to be a successful streamer is enjoy what you're doing. You're streaming because you want to. Not because you want to get rich, not because you want to get famous, but because you want to do it to have fun. That's the most important part. What actually makes people successful is having that attitude, but also having the skills to be entertaining and know how to publicize yourself.
Yes.
Plus, also, there's a degree of luck to it, too.
That's, yeah. That's something about the coaches. Could they also be, not a drama coach, but could they be teaching them how to have a unique personality? Because if a kid gets on there, they're going to think, oh, all I got to do is scream like PewDiePie or one of these guys and just scream at the top of my lungs and throw temper tantrums and I'll get it. No, what gets you in is having a unique personality. Just,
yeah, like, be unique and be genuine.
Like, so, some people can have that be unique.
Have a dry humor, be very droll. You don't have to be a good player and you don't have to be an abysmal player. Just play, and if people like who you are, they'll just keep coming back.
And if you end up playing a game a lot, you're going to end up pretty good at it. I guarantee it.
Like, I started out sucking at COD a couple of years ago. I was terrible, and yet I still kept buying them. But it wasn't until Advanced Warfare and Black Ops 3 I got good. But I'm terrible at World War II because it's boots on the ground for whatever reason. So you're right. Like, if you stick with it, and I used to stream at... and I wouldn't say I got popular, but I used to stream and I used to troll people.
Yeah,
I'd go into gun game and punch people and people hated that. They're like, fuck you!
When you're a streamer or a YouTuber or a personality on one of these websites and you have a small community of only maybe 10 people to 100 people, that's a tight-knit community.
Because you all know each other.
Well, like, you might not know each other in real life, but they follow you because they like who you are. And you end up forming a bond there. That's important.
And that's not a case of, like, it's like, oh, I've only got 10 fans. You know what?
You have 10
fans.
Again,
you would do it any... If you're smart, you do it anyway. If you're playing with anybody or not, or anybody's there or not, and you don't have to talk to them, but you can just have it on the screen. And somebody shows up, you know what? Just talk to them, be normal, and be like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, acknowledge them by name. Talk to them a little bit. Explain what you're doing, why you're doing it. Have a conversation. Like, if you really need some help, have a picture of someone you'd want to talk to that's watching you play.
Because really, if you're watching a stream, there's really only a couple reasons you're there. One, you're bored, and you just want to find something random. Two, you're interested in that game.
Yeah.
Three, you like the person playing.
Yeah, I mean...
That's pretty much... I mean, short of some people that are just there to troll other people, but you kick them out or ban them, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's really only three reasons, and if you're lucky, they like all... they're bored, they like you, and they like the game, and then they'll keep coming back.
Like, one of the streamers I follow is a streamer named Fuya. She's a Team Caliber streamer. I don't play Fortnite that much because I'm terrible at it, but I like watching her because it's entertaining. I stick around. This community, she gets a couple hundred viewers per stream, but she's got a Discord... And I'm getting to know some of these kids in there, and her mom knows who I am. Like, and whenever I come in, hey, Mike, or whenever Fuya sees me and Blair, hey, Mike, hey, Blair. That's a streamer who gives a shit.
Exactly.
And it's not often I get a streamer who knows who I am.
It's almost like if it's handled right with the right community, it can be like pen pals.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You feel like you have that kind of a relationship.
It's become what YouTube was in the first year and a half.
When it was
either people throwing up old cartoons and stuff randomly before all the copyright stuff, but it was mostly vlogging, and you'd get maybe like 1,000 views, but you'd have like 20 people that you did vlog videos back and forth with, and you were literally sending, like, instead of an email, you were sending a video letter to your friends that you made online, and that's sort of what streaming is, until you get really big.
Yeah, once you reach the point where the chat moves too fast to read, it kind of changes the dynamic.
Yeah, because I follow a couple other streamers, and they're pretty popular. They know who I am, but because their chat moves so quick, I don't get the same interaction, which is kind of sucky.
And when you get to that point, when you get like 100 people watching, or even, probably about 100 would be the point where it starts to move really fast, you almost then want to have somebody else in the room with you that's just handling reading it, and then picking out things.
YouTube streaming handles part of that with the, I don't remember exactly what they call it, it's like a super like.
Yeah.
Where you spend $5, $10, however many dollars, and it leaves your comment in the chat for a longer period of time.
No, but if you've got a really fast chat, you could have somebody on a laptop working with you and just say, so-and-so just entered, and be like, hey, what's up?
So, hey, maybe there's a new kind of revenue stream for someone to groom you to be a proper streamer. And it's a lot of common sense, but as we discussed here, there's a lot of good theory behind it too. Yeah. So, hey, streaming, we offer our services.
Streaming and YouTubing is a very wide skill set. You need a lot of different skills, so there's a lot of learning up.
And at the same time, moral of the story, be diligent, be careful, don't get bilked by people that are just trying to, you know, take your money and don't give any value out of it.
Yeah, any negativity, just get rid of it right away. Don't give in to trolls, just get rid of them.
Yeah.
And I guess to tack on another moral of the story here is, just because you have a coach doesn't mean you're going to be the next Michael Jordan.
But
you never know.
But it's the same in any sport. Parents always think their kids are the best. And for the most part,
set your expectations.
Yes.
And losing is okay too. You can be entertaining, you can have fun, and you can lose all at the same time.
Yes.
So that's what happened in the world of geek, dork, and dweeb this past week. So we're going to throw things over to the weird news this week. And, it's certainly been a strange one. So we'll be back here only on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to Twig, the flagship of stupidity, and we are continuing along this merry road of stupidity with the weird news. What happened in the world this week that was strange, bizarre, and just plain fucked up? Well, we're going to throw things off to a good old great big sea song known as Donkey Riding. And
what's their song? I thought that was a song from, like, a classic song.
I don't know. All I know is their cover of it. So
okay, as we say, in public school, it was, like, a standard song we all had to sing.
I did not know that. You learn something new every day here on this show, don't you? So, Tristan, why don't you bring us up to read with the donkey story?
Yes. Nothing like a good ass. In Santorini, Greece, there are donkeys that carry tourists around. It's just part of it. Donkey rides. It's a mode of transportation. Has been for a long time. But these donkeys are becoming crippled with spinal injuries and open wounds because they're carrying tourists that are a little husky.
American? Because they're carrying American and Canadian tourists, is what you're saying?
So the recommendation is that a donkey does not carry more than about 20% of its body weight. But because of overweight and obese passengers, the donkeys are getting permanently crippled. The saddles are inadequate, and the entire setup just isn't there. The donkeys are forced to carry these overweight patrons and ending up screwed over for it.
See, here's what I don't get. If you're a fat person on a donkey, makes no sense to me. Why wouldn't you just ride a horse?
Oh, because
at that point,
when I looked into it and I got deep into it yesterday, horses aren't supposed to carry more than 225 to 240 pounds ever.
Unless they're
a Clydesdale, like basically a workhorse, and that's only because standard horse is about 1600 to 1800 pounds. So 20% of its weight, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But workhorses can be anywhere from 2200 to 2800. And those are the ones you see doing tractor pulls. Now, when you get two horses together, they can pull 8 to 12,000 pounds behind them.
Jesus.
Because it actually triples. Two horses actually triples the pulling power for whatever reason.
And this is why we measure things in horsepower.
Now, riding on their back, though, that's pulling something is very different than holding something on your shoulders, as anybody would know. Or on your back, on all fours.
Exactly.
So, for instance, anybody, basically the fattest you can be on the strongest breed of horses, and these are like 7 foot tall horses, like the big monstrous ones. The ones that have, like, you know, when you see those people having like go-go boots, like the furry boots, that's what they look like they have themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And their legs are like half as thick as like an elephant's leg, right? Like they're monsters.
Yeah,
it's basically
big animals.
It's not the backs on the workhorses, it's always the legs that can buckle and go, right? It's just with anybody, ankles. So the biggest you can be is above 500 pounds.
So and I may have horse riding in our future if we lose some weight.
And the biggest horses we can probably get on, but at the same time, that's a maximum weight that's not including saddle, that's not including anything carrying. Okay. So it doesn't mean you can't put more on there, but that's the highest recommended without any long. Like you could ride it. You and I could ride like a normal horse that's like over 2,000 pounds, without any issues. If you're riding it once, it's prolonged riding all day, all night.
Yeah, these donkeys are doing this all the time.
Yeah,
it's
they won't
tourism.
Get stronger. Eventually, it will put issues with them. But that is why fat people riding a cart behind it. But no, but a horse, you could do it. Or you could just be like in Blazing Saddles, ride like Mongo, where he rode the ox. Because like if you ride an ox, can hold like 1,000 pounds or more on its back. But I didn't really think of that. But look at most cowboys. They're not really more than 225, 250. The bigger guys won't usually ride them unless they're riding Clydesdale or riding some sort of like workhorse.
Mm-hmm. You know, now that you mention that, I'm thinking back to some of the cowboy fiction I've seen, even in movies and video games and TV. Yeah, you're kind of right. The bigger guys are always on the bigger horses.
Or, yeah, they're not usually on like the riding, like the race horses. Or if they are on a horse in a movie, the movie will trick you into thinking they're on it the whole time. They're really only on it for about 10 minutes. So the article is basically like, if you're going to have a horse that's main job 8 hours a day is carrying fat people, it better be a horse that can hold 500 pounds, not a horse that can hold 220.
Yeah.
Because people are fat. The average weight of an American or Canadian male is in the 275 range now. It just is.
We're big people nowadays.
So we're also taller than previous generations ever were. It's actually a trend that's going down, though, with the newer generation, but people born, you know, from the 50s to the 90s were generally the tallest generations ever.
And I can attest to this.
Yes. So I found it very interesting, like just the maximum weight capacities that horses can have, and how that's pretty much the reason why you never really see, even in movies, really large people riding. Like, when you see in a movie a person riding on a horse and they grab a woman and, you know, they save her from the bad guy and they ride the horse, that's still generally a guy that weighs, like, 150 and a girl that weighs 100 pounds.
Yeah, there's between the two of them, there's not really that much weight. They're not fat people. They're the super
lean. Or if they are bigger people, they have two or three people on a horse, it's a workhorse that's pulling, you know, that's plowing the fields. It's carrying 4,000 pounds behind it.
Or it's a couple of hobbits on a horse.
For some reason, when we were talking about this story, when I picture a fat American, you know who I picture now? Alex Jones. And just the
but he's not even that fat.
I just have this weird mental image of Alex Jones riding a donkey out of my head now.
Well, what I picture is trying to think of somebody really that's really big that's actually powerful. And you think of like Chris Christie trying to ride a horse, and you can just think of that horse going as it cripples itself into the ground.
Rob Ford.
Rob Ford and
Doug Ford too.
Yeah.
Rob's
dead. God! Can someone draw fan art of this? I'm really curious.
Doug Ford on a donkey.
I would like to ride a horse, but I wouldn't want to ride, like, you look at a normal horse's legs and they're skinny, so you can tell which horses you can ride and which ones you can't. if I look at a horse and I go, the horse's legs are as thin as my arm, I probably shouldn't ride it.
The only thing I want to ride that has four legs, because horses terrify me, is an Imperial Walker. That's it.
I'll go with an elephant. I want to ride an elephant.
I did that once.
Okay, and you know what? I would not have a problem riding an elephant, because the elephants, I think, can hold like 2,500 pounds on their back.
I would imagine. They're kind of built as
walking
tanks.
Well, it's just how wide they are, and it's just...
Their entire bone structure is built to have a lot of weight on it.
As long as you treat them with respect, they're not going to fuck with you.
Yeah, elephants are respectful, and they're smart, so they will respond
to
you.
And if you do fuck with them, they'll kill you. They'll shit and wipe it on you. They'll do that, or they'll pick you up, or they'll spray at you. They'll play pranks on you.
They'll take a dump and then buck up and launch you into it
on purpose, because they have a personality. So I would totally ride like an Indian elephant or an African elephant. That'd be awesome.
Like a war elephant.
Yes,
that's what we need.
Well, and that's the thing. And if you look, the horses, and you see in movies when they would ride into war, they always use like.
Fast,
because they're easy to film with.
Yeah,
but the reality is, and that's fake armor they're wearing. A real war horse would have been a work breed because it was going to wear 100 pounds of armor on the horse, because that much chain link on a horse is going to.
Yeah,
I never even thought about that.
Yeah, so it's kind of inaccurate when you see most movies,
but as movies are.
But also the article stated that horses in general, work horses, are down. Like the amount that exists, 80% over the last 100 years.
Well, we're not using horses as much as we did 80 years ago.
So that would explain why there's just not as much for movies and things either.
Because
the ones that are here are working.
Plain and simple.
So, moving on to our next story. Going back to the topic of video games, we found this story via Kotaku. A guy named TJ the Blind Gamer, a 19-year-old gamer out of Utah, has racked up 76 kills in World War II, Call of Duty, without being able to see a goddamn thing. So he goes on to explain in a Reddit thread, he uses in-game sound cues from World War II and Black Ops 3 to hunt down people, such as in the COD Zombies maps, Chronicles. He uses the gobblegum machine and the buzz of the overhead lamps to help him figure out where he is. So due to the sound cues and sound design that have been put into these games, he's able to navigate and go kick some ass. So evidently, he was able to see earlier on in his life. He only had vision in his right eye, and he wore glasses. But he started playing way back in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Modern Warfare 2 and Call of Duty World at War at the age of 8.
There's so many of these titles. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
They're hard to follow. Call of Duty, your mom's house, you know, Call of Duty, Grandma's Cookies Edition, whatever.
So he goes on to say, is when I lost my vision and attempted to play Call of Duty again, it was pretty difficult since I was never used to using a headset as much as I would need to without my vision. There are several settings and perks within Black Ops 3 that function as accidental accessibility to many disabled players. Awareness can amplify enemy footsteps and range. Sixth Sense creates an audio effect for the blind as well as a visual effect for the deaf. And the tracker perks helps people with low vision. Which I think this is kind of cool. Now, the recent addition of the Call of Duty Alexa skill, which allows players to use the Amazon Alexa to give and receive voice commands, also allows TJ to get more information in a non-visual way. The Alexa skill can offer gameplay tips, check stats, and prestige progress, and even tell players if their friends are online. They're hoping to get the interviewer speaking with TJ asks what improvements Activision can make to Call of Duty titles for people that are blind and also visually auditorily impaired. TJ responded with a couple of good ideas. One thing I can think of right off the top of my head is to have some sort of setting or perk create a constant audio effect for all the objective game modes. If you have the setting turned on, the domination flags, kill confirm tags, capture the flags, demolition, search and destroy bomb sites would all have a constant audio effect so that the visually impaired players can find the objectives more easily. He also suggested a screen reader for within the Call of Duty games that would read the on-screen text, which I think is a really good idea.
Yeah.
At this moment, a visually impaired player would have to have a sighted person tell them to look up or guide them for the names of the guns that they're unlocking. 7,600 kills, not being able to see a damn thing.
That's 7,600 more than I have.
Same here.
This kid is... that's astounding. And I only put it in the weird news because the kid is blind at 19.
So he's...
racking it up.
He's the bullet whisperer, basically.
You need to DM this kid. Call yourself this. That's awesome.
It's remarkable that he's managed to adapt the systems that are built into the game.
Call yourself this, and I just send a picture of what he should call it.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. Okay, someone
anyway,
tell this kid the bullet whisperer.
Using the in-game systems, like it was put in the article, accidental accessibility tools, where they have the perks that increase the audio, increase the visibility.
Is this Activision or EA doing this?
Activision.
Okay, so then in a couple of weeks they'll patch it so it doesn't have that anymore.
Which, you know, it's kind of funny because I've, as a Call of Duty player, have noticed some of those audio perks are good for certain game modes such as search and destroy, being able to hear the enemy because you don't have your radar.
Yeah.
That's useful.
Yeah.
But I never thought about the range of more footsteps, being able to hear things ping off the walls. Like,
yeah, man. I always use it as a tool to give a strategic advantage, but not so much as being able to play the game in the first place.
Yeah.
The only places I've really seen any sort of accessibility function is color blindness, by having certain aspects of the game shift from being a red-green scale, like red is bad and green is your team, mm-hmm. to having other scales like blue to pink, something that they can actually see depending on the type of color blindness they have. But not total vision loss, not total auditory loss. It's,
you know,
it's
what, gone. It's cool, because gone are the times of, hey, you're defective, you don't get to play games.
Yeah.
That was the attitude up until like the last
couple years.
10 years or so, they started adding a lot more accessibility stuff. PC always had a little more, you could always mod things, but the attitude previously for people, with the exception of occasionally like one-handed controllers coming out for whatever reason sometimes.
But they have some multiple functions.
Yeah, but generally, if you were considered challenged or handicapped in some form, they're like, tough, too bad, you can't play, fuck you.
This isn't really made for you then.
And they realize that there is a very sizable part of the market out there that were underserved or not served at all. And it's really not that hard to put these modes in now. Like, a lot of times they have the engine for let's say it's NVIDIA makes it or something. There'll be an option just to flip a switch and make it work, at least on PC. And now that consoles are using generally x86-based CPUs and hardware, it's not hard for them to just enable that in software.
Yeah, and this is maybe an extra week or two of development time.
Not even.
To put in these little things. I mean, one of the things I didn't notice this year, when I became handicapped last year losing my leg, I now have to sit farther away from the TV.
You're also at an angle.
Yeah.
So I mean, you have a good viewing angle, but you kind of want to be, if you're at the angle you're at, you want to be about 3 feet closer than you are.
Yeah. Because I am not as good a shot as I used to be in COD. Because, like, I sit about 8 feet back from the TV, and I'm on, what, about a 45-degree angle, Alex?
Yeah.
I'd say 30-ish, actually.
Yeah, because at 45, it would be a little harder to see. You're basically, when you're sitting, if you were sitting on a couch at home listening to this, and the TV's in the center, you're on one of the cushions to the left or right, sort of turned a little bit to look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's weird just now that I have to increase text size. I have to turn up my audio because I'm not sitting as close to the TV. And I don't know. It's something that I never even thought about.
I still think if you're playing COD, that you don't really play with headphones. I should start. I think specifically for games that require this sort of play, it would probably help you dramatically. Even if you can't make out everything that's happening on the screen, but if you hear directional audio, you can hear the cue better.
Yeah, because when I used to play Advanced Warfare, I'd hear someone coming up behind me, I'd spin around and pop them.
And I think for those kind of games, you're probably going to enjoy that a lot more if you start using headphones.
You know what? This kid, TJ, a company like Astral, or AstroStory, or Vectrix, needs to sponsor this kid.
You know who needs to get him? Logitech, SteelSeries. They should put out... He needs to have headphones that are sponsored, like one of those virtual surround headphones or whatever.
Like 7.1.
Yeah, and somebody could pick them up, and Mad Catz is back now, right?
Yep.
You want a good get?
Get this kid.
Yeah, they already, Mad Catz is really good at essentially modular hardware and accessories for computers. That's the perfect example of a company that could take a challenge like this and make headsets that have additional accessibility options.
Especially since they're only back the last 6 months or so, and they're looking to really re-enter the field. This would be perfect for them.
I kind of know the guy over at Mad Catz PR. I kind of want to, like, yo, hey.
Tweet at him.
Have an idea for you. So,
could
anyway,
be the birth of something special.
Have an idea
today
for you, but you're going to have to call him. Don't.
Yeah.
tweeting at him is probably not going to work.
But anyway, guys, that's what happened in the weird, wacky, and strange of the internet this week. We're going to throw things over to Satan's Pantry, and then Mr. Christopher has a review of Survive, Mr. Cube. We'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decided to take a look down your international grocer's aisle, where we find something delicious, disgusting, and I can't think of another word for deranged, perhaps. I'm, of course, Mike.
Deranged?
Deranged. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with...
Oh, I wasn't prepared for this. Emperor Wayne.
Well, I'm Mr. Christopher.
Alex.
Well, one of you is at least on the ball tonight.
Yes.
So, yes.
That was warbly as hell.
We are trying something new, delicious. I'm wrong. I'm horribly fucking wrong. We're trying something called durian candy.
Now,
who knows the history behind this thing?
It's a fruit from Southeast Asia that they have in China and a bunch of other places. It is in the Guinness Book as being the stinkiest naturally occurring food on the planet. The only thing stinkier is that surstrumming, which is the...
flour?
No, it's fermented herring fish that they eat in Sweden.
Oh, is that thing from the Trailer Park Boys?
Yes. Now, that doesn't count because it's fermented first.
Okay.
And it's a fermented fish. If you just eat herring when it's fresh, it's herring.
Yeah.
This stuff is so bad that when I would go to the Asian market in downtown Kitchener, I go on my lunch break because it was within walking distance of school, you could smell it outside the building when they got it in fresh. And it smells like somebody opened up a septic tank and they just dove in.
So I'm fully expecting to spit this out.
Now, I can't wait.
Smelling through the packaging, these are candy, so it's probably in the center of it. So I don't know if we're going to have to chew into it or not to get to that stinky core.
Does it smell like... Okay, so it smells like shit. Does it taste good?
If you ask some of my friends that grew up in that culture where they're from, they love it. I've heard from everybody else who's had it who didn't grow up with it that it's hot garbage. It's the candy, dude. It's candy.
Okay, so I'm opening mine right now.
I would refuse to eat durian if it was fresh here because we would be vomiting. Mm. Alright, let's open this candy up. Oh.
Got a smell of that.
It smells like banana fruit.
You're
like,
a liar.
Like banana. You're
the trash compactor, though. You don't get a vote.
It tastes weird.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, did you put it in your mouth already?
You bet I did.
Yeah, we're going in.
Oh, God.
Endure.
Oh, my God.
Experience beige.
Oh, that's beige, alright.
Oh, that's Klingon warrior shit right there.
Oh, my God. Good lord.
Hey, Lacey, you should kiss Tristan right now.
Okay.
Did you chew it?
No.
I'm going to chew it. I'm going to chew it.
No.
Why?
Oh, you saw that.
That was a mistake. Oh, God. That was a mistake. Oh, iced tea. Oh, for the love of Christ.
Oh, my God.
I think Alex is dying.
Oh my God, this is so bad.
Endure it, buddy.
Holy fuck.
It's like stinky baby fart diapers. Oh, it's coming through my nose. Like from behind.
Okay, wait.
People buy this bags at a time.
You know what's weird? The aftertaste is actually kind of good.
No, it isn't. No, it is not.
It tastes like bananas. Oh boy. That was a mistake. Oh boy, don't chew this shit.
This is horrible. Oh.
Alright, girls, your turn. Oh god. Alright, now Lee, do 10.
I'm eating something else.
Yeah, he's gonna eat death chips we had a couple weeks back.
No, do it, dude. Have like two of them. It's like warheads, only like
I couldn't get through the one. I had to take it out of my mouth.
Okay. You know what it tastes like?
Chew it?
Oh yeah.
It tastes like
it's gonna be stuck in my teeth.
It tastes like reaching behind the toilet and picking up something slimy from behind there and just sticking the fingers in your mouth.
That's pretty accurate, actually. That is.
I want vile. I want a few of these. I'm gonna give them to my dad on his birthday.
Here, take the fucking package.
I can take the whole package. Done deal.
Okay.
How many durians?
This is the man with the iron stomach saying.
Oh my god.
How many durians do you get here?
See, you know what? I will say this. The initial taste is terrible. Mm. Biting into it is a big fucking mistake.
Oh, it's so bad.
But the aftertaste is like banana medicine.
No,
it's not. What kind of banana medicine? You've been drinking one that's been sitting out in the sun for like 6 months?
Speaking of fermented. Good lord.
So I think we had our truly disgusting winner on this show.
Dinner was coming up.
Thank you, Blair and Tristan, for this wonderfully vile treat.
Don't blame me for this.
I got a piece of the center of the durian candy stuck between two teeth, and I can't get it out.
We have those things. We'll give you one after.
God damn it.
So hope you've enjoyed listening to Alex die for the last few minutes. I've been Birdman for Satan's Pantry right here on Twig, clearly the flagship of stupidity.
It tastes like the candy went bad.
Don't do this, kids. Stay in school.
Don't ever touch durian candy.
It stained the top of my mouth.
Fuck off, you fat, useless sack of fucking Yankee danky doodle shite. Fuck off, will you please, Jack?
Survive, Mr. Cube is a roguelike game from Intragames available on PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and iOS for mobile. And while what it does have, it does well, it doesn't have much at all. The premise is simple. You are a cube person thing, and you need to navigate this strange world you found yourself in and find a way back to the life and world you came from. But this world is filled with danger and monsters, also cube-shaped. Whether or not the developers were inspired by Minecraft for this art style, it certainly feels like it. Not much information is given to you as you start the game. You start with your weapon and little else in a small camp, and you travel through a portal to reach the first level of monsters and treasure. Your goal is to fight the way through each level of the map until you find the boss, finding new weapons and gathering some potions to help you along the way. Each level has a tower that will open the way to another level of the map once you've destroyed its defenses. Navigate through each level, defeat the many endlessly spawning enemies, get some upgrades for your cube person, and take on the boss. If you beat it, you'll unlock the next world. There are 4 worlds in total, but truth be told, I was able to get every achievement available for the game without leaving the first one. The combat is decent, with very unique feeling weapons ranging from swords and spears to a staff of fireball and a quirky hot sauce bottle that you lob like a Molotov cocktail. Some of the weapons are difficult to use, however, as you use your right analog stick to aim the attack, and it doesn't always land where you want it to. Otherwise, the simplicity of the combat makes it approachable, which is good because it's the only thing there is to do in the game. There are enough enemy types to avoid getting stale, but it always boils down to slashing at foes as they slash or shoot at you. The difficulty is reasonable, though spikes sharply after the third world. Most of the game will provide a reasonable challenge that demands at least a little of your attention, and there is a very real chance that you'll die. In fact, I'd encourage it. The game expects you to die, and builds one of its few core principles around it. When you die, a semi-randomly generated new cube person will take your place. Equipped with a new randomized new weapon, you'll wake up in the same camp your now dead former cube started in, except a merchant has now taken up residence. You can spend coins earned from killing monsters and opening chests here to get random weapons, potions, and upgrades for your health and stamina. Then off you go, back into the maze. The random cube people have quirky, gimmicky names with no real bearing on gameplay, and loading screens will explain their backstory in a quick sentence, such as Tomboy Cube, who is apparently a costume play maniac. I am telling you it's a he, seriously. I don't understand it, but that's an exact quote. It's likely a localization thing, but it only serves to add to the sense of confusion as you play. Ultimately, I can only recommend Survive Mr. Cube to achievement hunters, as there really isn't enough depth to keep players playing long enough to get their money's worth. But if you're after those achievements, you should be able to hit 100% in about 2 hours or less, so this is a good one to boost those rookie numbers. Survive Mr. Cube is a cute idea, but it fails to deliver anything special or memorable, and lacks any complexity to grip you and to discover more. Because there really isn't anything more to discover after your first hour. If you're looking for a good new roguelike, give this one a pass. But if you're after those sweet, sweet achievement points, this will be a good one to breeze through. Until the next review, this is Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
And that has been our show for this week here on Twig. Actually, we've just been talking in the kind of the post-show. How to snap your fingers, how to make that whistling sound with your fingers in your mouth. And I just learned what the term gleek means. Spitting in a rather concentrated stream out of your mouth. Never been able to do that.
Whole bunch of anatomical lessons were learned today.
I also don't know how to armpit fart either.
If you have a hairy armpit, it doesn't work very well.
Wait, also, it won't work because you're a fat ass.
Oh, so I have to be a slim person to pull this off.
The air's got to get out somewhere.
I stopped being able to do it as your arms and side meat get thicker. It gets harder to do.
I also never been able to burp on command. Although my wife Blair can burp like wacko water, which is amazing. Which is part of the reason why I actually married her, because she could burp on command.
Oh, I thought you said because she could armpit fart.
It's
a valuable
know.
Skill. It's
I
very useful.
I kind of want to ask her. Blair didn't know how to armpit fart.
Has military applications.
Oh, okay. So hopefully you've enjoyed our show this week, and we've talked about Destiny, Dungeons & Dragons, Fortnite coaches, the weirdness that is being a blind gamer, or more or less how you're slaying everyone on the field.
The weirdness as in you're a weirdo, is that what you're saying?
The weirdness of being blind, no, that is not the weirdness.
No.
The weirdness is you managed to get, like, amazing
display. He's basically
heightened his senses to the point where he's a superhero.
He's Daredevil! Daredevil can play
Call of Duty Daredevil.
That's the weirdness.
I love it. So we've talked about all that and more this week. So big thanks to our winners who won our Quiet Place. Once again, thank you to Paramount for providing the prizes for this wonderful giveaway. We should have more as the summer and rolling into the fall. Because, hey, Broketober's coming up. Maybe I'll have a couple of codes to give away for some of those games.
Who knows?
Who knows? So until next time, for This Week in Geek, we have been...
Mr. Tristopher.
And Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, have yourselves a happy and safe Civic Holiday weekend if you're in Canada, if you're in America. Well, just don't set the house on fire.
Have a Monday later.
It's not really a holiday. Everything's like 50% open.
So
yeah, it's a half holiday. It's a half a day.
It's discount holiday.
Yeah.
Until next time, folks, live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Off-brand holiday.
Well, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this. Insert a clip here, you dick. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
You motherfucker. That's like 7 edits I gotta do now. You stupid.
Well, we're peaking like fuck right now anyway.
Thank you for the fucking popcorn intro.
Just cut the whole fucking start of the damn thing.
Fuck.